You have shot me in cowardly fashion. Narciso cried in pain and rage. You are a dead man, cabrón, Tenorio shouted back. They clutched at each other and spun around and around like two huge animals. Blood was already blackening the snow as the wind buckled the two to the ground. Under the protection of the juniper, they rolled and grunted and cursed. I stood frozen, watching the deadly scene, unable to do anything. Then, I heard the second shot. This time it was not muffled by the wind, but by the body against which it had been fired. I held my breath as the living man untangled himself from the dead one and stumbled to his feet. It was Tenorio. May your soul be damned and go to hell, Tenorio cursed. His body heaved as he gasped and grunted for breath. Then, to add to his curse, he spit on the body of Narciso. I heard a low moan as Tenorio aimed his pistol at the head of Narciso. I screamed with fear, and Tenorio spun around and saw me. He aimed the pistol at me, and I heard the click of the firing pin. But there was no shot. You bastard of the witch, he snarled. He stuffed the pistol into his pocket, turned, and fled towards the highway. For some time, I did not move. I couldn't believe I was alive. I couldn't believe I was not dreaming a frightful nightmare. Then a moan from the dying man called me, and I walked to Narciso and knelt at his side. It was peaceful under the juniper tree. The snow continued to fall dense and heavy, but the wind was still. The tree's huge dark branches offered protection, like a confessional. I looked down at the bloodied face of Narciso, and I almost felt relieved of the terrible tension my fevered body had carried for so many hours. He seemed asleep. Snow covered the huge, brown, mustached face. I brushed some of the snow away, and his eyelids fluttered. Narciso? I heard myself say faintly. Hijo, he murmured. I slipped my hand under his head and whispered, Are you dead? He smiled faintly. His eyelids fluttered open, and I saw a glaze on his eyes that I had never seen before. Blood trickled from the corners of his mouth, and when his huge hand moved from his chest, I saw that he had been clutching the wound from the bullet. A warm, pulsating stream of blood wet his jacket and the snow. He made the sign of the cross, leaving dabs of blood where he touched his forehead, his chest, and the sides. Muchacho, his hoarse voice whispered. I need confession. I am dying. I shook my head in desperation. There would be no time to go for the priest. I couldn't make it back across the bridge, back to town, to the church. My cheeks did not feel the warm, salty tears that began flowing down and splattering on his bloodied face. I'm not a priest, I said. I felt his body jerk and stiffen. He was dying. Última. His voice was very faint. Dying. There is not time, I whispered. Then pray for me, he said weakly, and closed his eyes. You are pure of heart. I knew what I had to pray. I had to pray an act of contrition for his departing soul, like I prayed for Lupito. But I had not held Lupito while his body went cold. I had not bloodied my hands with his life's blood. I looked at the wound on the chest and saw the blood stop flowing. Rage and protest filled me. I wanted to cry out into the storm that it wasn't fair that Narciso die for doing good, that it wasn't fair for a mere boy to be at the dying of a man. confess me. I placed my ear to his mouth and heard his mumbled confession. I felt the tears running now, flooding my eyes and blinding me, flowing into the corners of my mouth, and I felt great sobs choking at my throat, trying to get loose. Thank you, Father. I will sin no more. I prayed. Oh my God, I am sorry for all of my sins, not because I dread the fires of hell, but because they displease you, Lord, who art all good and deserving of all my love, and with thy help, I will sin no more. Then I made the sign of the cross over him. It is good to die on a hill of the Llano, beneath the juniper, were his last words. I felt his last intake of air, and the moan as he breathed for the last time. I slipped my hand from under his head, then the sobs came. I knelt by his side for a long time, crying, thinking of all that had happened. And when the crying had cleansed my soul of the great weight of pity, I got up and ran home. I felt very weak and sick by the time I burst into my mother's kitchen. Antonio! My mother cried. I rushed into her warm arms and was safe.
Ay, Jesús, María y José!
Where have you been? I heard my father ask from his chair.
School's been out a long time.
It was Deborah teasing. I think I started laughing, or crying, because my mother looked at me strangely and felt my forehead.
Your clothes are wet, and you have a fever.
Then I felt Ultima's hand on mine.
Sangre, she whispered.
It was the blood of Narciso on my hands. The room and the faces staring at me began to swim as if I was the center of a dark, rushing whirlpool.
Dios mío, my mother cried. Are you hurt, Tony?
I knew those were pistol shots I heard. My father leaped from his chair and grabbed me by the collar of my jacket.
Are you hurt? What has happened?
Narciso,
I blurted out.
By the juniper, I thought I heard Ultima say.
She knit her brow and seemed to be testing the air for any trace of danger left to us.
He is dead,
I cried.
But where?
My father said in disbelief. My mother's eyes fluttered, and she stumbled back. Ultima picked me up.
On the goat path.
But how? Did you see it?
He was already reaching for his jacket.
The boy can speak no more. He must rest, Ultima said.
See,
my mother cried anxiously. Together they carried me to her room. I will go and see, my father said. I heard the door bang.
More blankets, Ultima told my mother, and she ran to obey.
They had taken off my wet, frozen clothes and stuffed me under thick, warm blankets.
He was coming to warn you,
I whispered to Ultima.
Tenorio threatened to kill you. There was a terrible fight. He was coming to warn you.
He was a good man.
Her sad eyes filled with sympathy.
But you must not talk now, my son. You must rest.
My mother brought the blankets. Ultima rubbed my body with an ointment of Vicks and many of her herbs. Then she gave me something cool to drink. She begged me to be still, but the fever compelled me to repeat my awful tale over and over.
Beneath our juniper, on the goat path, he shot Narciso. I saw all. I gave confession. My son,
my mother cried. I could see in their eyes that they were very worried,
and I tried to tell them that I was not sick, that I simply had to tell my story to purge the fever. Over and over, I shouted out the scene of the murder. Then, the cold spells came, and I shivered with a cold that could not be thawed by the warmth of the blankets. Late into the afternoon, I alternated between the burning fever and the shivering cold. Soon, I lost track of time. Sometime during the illness, I saw the face of the doctor from town, and later, I saw Andrew. And always, Ultima was near me, caring for every turn I made in the progress of that hideous journey. It was a long night during which the nightmares, like a herd of wild horses, trampled through my fevered mind. Strange scenes swirled in my ocean of pesadilla, and each one seemed to drown me with its awful power. I saw Andrew and the young girl from Rosie's. They held each other and danced while Narciso pounded at the cold door. She was naked, and her long flowing hair enveloped Andrew and kept him from helping Narciso. She pulled Andrew away, and he followed her into the frightful fires of hell. "Andrew," I cried. I struggled desperately to help him, but I could not move beneath the heavy blankets. "God forgive him," I screamed, and from the dancing flames there issued a thunderous voice. "I am not a god of forgiveness," the voice roared. "Hear me," I begged. "I hear no one who has not communed with me," God answered. "Your brother has sinned with the whores, and so I condemn him to hell for eternity." "No," I pleaded. "Hear me, and I shall be your priest." "I can have no priest who has golden idols before him," God answered, and the flames roared and consumed everything. In the crackling, frolicking flames, I saw the face of Narciso. His face was bloody and his eyes dark with death. "Forgive Narciso," I cried to God. "I will," the terrible voice responded, "if you also ask me to forgive Tenorio." "But Tenorio murdered Narciso. Tenorio did evil." A loud peal of laughter boomed and rang out in the valley of flames. It rolled in clouds of dark smoke like the thunder of the summer thunderstorms. "I will forgive Tenorio," a soft voice called. I turned and saw the forgiving virgin. "No, no," I cried. "It is Narciso that you must forgive. Intercede for him so that he may gain the joys of heaven." "Antonio," she smiled, "I forgive all." "You cannot," I persisted in my delirium. "You must punish Tenorio for killing Narciso." And again, the laughter rang from the flames. "You foolish boy," God roared. "Don't you see you are caught in your own trap? You would have a God who forgives all, but when it comes to your personal whims, you seek punishment for your vengeance. You would have my mother rule my heavens. You would send all sinners to her for forgiveness, but you would also have her taint her hands with the blood of vengeance." "Vengeance is mine," he shouted. "Not even your golden carp would give up that power as a god." "Oh," I cried, "forgive me, Lord. I have sinned. I have sinned exceedingly in thought, word, and deed. My thoughts have trapped me and made me flee from you." Then the flames parted, and I saw the blood of Narciso flow into the river and mix with the blood of Lupito. Many people were drawn by the sweet smell of blood. There was much excitement in the town as the news spread that the blood on the hill was sweet and a curative for all sins. The mob gathered and chanted, "Taste but one drop of the blood of La Curandera, and the key to heaven is assured." "We must have the blood of Ultima," they cried, and they formed a long caravan to cross the bridge and come unto the hill. Like Tenorio and the men who killed Lupito, They trampled the once pure pebbles of the goat path. At the head of the caravan were three men. They were three tortured spirits led by three women who drove them with whips.
Antonio, they called. Antonio Foros, help us. We are your brothers who have lost the way.
Their voices cried in the gathering wind.
Oh, help us, our sweet brother, help us. We followed neither the laws of God or of your pagan god, and we paid no heed to the magic of your ultima. We have sinned in every way. Bless us, brother. Bless us and forgive us.
My heart was wretched at the sight of their flagellation, but I was helpless.
I am not a priest, I cried. I too have sinned. I have doubted the Lord.
But you have the blood of the Luna priest, they persisted. But touch our foreheads, and we shall be saved. I held my bloodied hands out to touch them, and felt the cloven hooves of hairy animals. I looked up and saw the three Trementina sisters dancing around me.
Hi, hi, they cried and danced. Through your body went the spell that cured Lucas, and your name lent strength to the curse that took one of us from the service of our master.
We will have our vengeance on you, their voices crackled. They cut my black hair with rusty scissors and mixed the hair with the blood of bats. This they poured, together with the insides of a toad, into a bowl. They knew the toad was the animal opposed to me in life, and that its touch or even its sight made me sick. They brewed this mixture over their evil fire, and when it was done, they drank it. I saw my body withering away. My mother came and touched my forehead, then began her mourning wail.
Ultima sat by me, powerless in the face of death.
I saw the priest from town come, and he rubbed the holy oil at my feet and prayed. A long, dark night came upon me, in which I sought the face of God, but I could not find him. Even the Virgin and my Saint Anthony would not look at my face. I had died without having taken the Eucharist, and I was cursed. In front of the dark doors of purgatory, my bleached bones were laid to rest. And the Trementina sisters led the caravan over the path and onto our hill. Before the maddened crowd, the she-goats and the he-goats ran in fright. Florence, Red, Ernie, Bones, Horse, and all the rest also tried to flee, but they were captured and put in chains. Even the girls Rita and Agnes and Lydia and Ida and June were caught and put in heavy chains of iron. Under the weight of the chains, their young faces wrinkled and grew old. The wicked people burned our castle on the hill. My father and mother and my sisters perished in the flames. They killed the owl and made Ultima powerless. Then they beheaded her and drank her blood. When they were bathed in blood, they tied her to a post, drove a stake through her heart, and burned her. They went to the river and caught the carp that swam there, and brought the fish back and cooked it in the fires of Ultima's ashes. And they ate the flesh of the carp. Then there was a thundering of the earth, and a great rift opened. The church building crumbled, and the school collapsed into dust. Then the whole town disappeared into the chasm. A great cry went up from the people as they saw crashing, tumultuous waters fill the dark hole. The people were afraid.
Do not fear. Do not fear.
The Trementinas danced and sang.
We are on the holy hill and we are saved.
Then the people laughed and continued their feasting on the meat of the carp. The wind blew dusty now, and the sun turned blood red. The people looked upon each other, and they saw their skin rot and fall off. Shrieks of pain and agony filled the air, and the whole countryside cried in mourning as the walking dead buried their sleeping dead. A putrid, rotting smell was everywhere. There was disease and filth throughout. In the end, no one was left, and the she-goats and the he-goats returned from the hills whence they had fled, and they looked in innocence at the death camp of the people. The wind ceased its lapping of stagnant water against the shores of the lake, and there was quiet. The farmers from El Puerto, my uncles, came and stirred the ashes, and finding the ashes of my family and Ultima, they gathered them and returned to El Puerto to bury them in the holy ground of their fields. Evening settled over the land and the waters. The stars came out and glittered in the dark sky. In the lake, the golden carp appeared. His beautiful body glittered in the moonlight. He had been witness to everything that happened, and he decided that everyone should survive, but in new form. He opened his huge mouth and swallowed everything, everything there was, good and evil. Then he swam into the blue velvet of the night, glittering as he rose towards the stars. The moon smiled on him and guided him, and his golden body burned with such beautiful brilliance that he became a new sun in the heavens, a new sun to shine its good light upon a new earth. 15. After the fever broke, I was in bed for many days. The doctor told my mother I had had pneumonia and that I was to get as much rest as possible. As I regained my strength, I learned what had happened. My father had found the body of Narciso frozen stiff under the juniper tree. My father went to the sheriff and accused Tenorio, but he had only the word of a small, sick boy to back his accusation. The coroner's jury that gathered under the juniper tree found the cause of death to be accidental or self-inflicted. Then they hurried away from the cold to the warmth of their homes. Because Narciso was the town drunk, nobody cared much. My father protested, but there was little he could do. And so Narciso was buried, and the town said he had died during one of his drunks. He was a big and wild man. He drank and cursed like most men do. But he was a good man. He died trying to help an old friend. He had the magic of growth in his hands, and he passed it into the earth. Now his house was deserted, and his garden withered away, and few people remembered anything good about Narciso. While I was still in bed recovering, Andrew stopped by to talk to me. I guess he figured that if he had listened to Narciso, that he would still be alive, because the first thing he said was, "I'm sorry about Narciso." "Yes," I nodded. I didn't tell him that I had seen him at Rosie's house. I hadn't told anyone, and I never would. "I'm sorry you saw the murder," he stammered. "Why?" I asked. I did not feel comfortable talking to him. I looked at Ultima, who had not left my side since that dreadful night, and I guess she understood, because she stood up from where she sat crocheting. Andrew understood that it was a signal to leave. "I don't know," he said. "You're only a kid. I'm just sorry." "He must rest," Ultima said kindly. "Yes," Andrew agreed. "I just wanted to see how he was. How do you feel, Tony?" He was nervous. "Fine," I answered. "Good. Good," he muttered. "Well, I'll let you rest. I wish there was something I could do. I'm sorry. That's all." He turned and left. After that, he brought me candy and fruit from the store, but he gave it to my mother to deliver to me. He never came into the room. He would only wave from the door as he went off to work in the mornings. Later, I asked Ultima, "Did I talk about Andrew when I was in the fever?"
"Your blood is tied to the blood of your brothers," she answered.
and you spoke your dreams and love for them. But you did not reveal Andrew's secret. I was glad Ultima understood, and I was glad I hadn't talked about what I had seen at Rosie's. Like other unpleasant things, I began to blot it from my memory. So Christmas came and went. We had a small tree and we got clothes for presents. But the most important thing was going to visit the nativity scene at the church and going to La Misa de Gallo, midnight mass. I didn't go, of course, but when everyone returned, I was up and waiting for them, and we ate pozole. For dessert, we ate bizcochitos and hot coffee, flavored with sugar and cinnamon. When I could get up, I sat with Ultima in her room while she did her embroidery work. She told me stories about the old people of Las Pasturas. She told me about Narciso when he was a young man, a fine vaquero, and very respected. He had married a lovely young girl, but before they could raise a family, she had died. The diphtheria epidemic that had destroyed so many things in Las Pasturas had claimed her. After that, Narciso turned to drink and lost everything, but he remained forever grateful to Ultima, who worked so hard to try to save his young wife. The old people, Ultima said, always helped each other. Through good or bad, they stuck together, and the friendships that were formed in that desolate llano were bonds for life. Part of the time I had to spend with my mother, reciting my catechism. I already knew most of the prayers by memory, so I would sit with her in the kitchen while she cooked or ironed, and she would ask me to recite such and such a prayer, and I would. That made her very happy. In the spring, I will make arrangements for you to start catechism with the padre at the church, and then, on Easter Sunday, you will make your first Holy Communion. Just think, Antonio, for the first time you will hold God in your mouth, in your body, in your soul. You will speak to him, and he will answer, she said to me. And she smiled, and there were tears in her eyes. Then I will have the knowledge of God? I asked. Yes, she sighed. I hope you will use your knowledge to carry out God's will. You are a very bright boy. You understand so much. You can be a great leader, a priest. I do not want you to waste your life in dreams like your father. You must make something of yourself. You must serve the people. The people need good leaders, and the greatest leader is a priest. Yes, I agreed. And then in the summer, she continued, you will go and stay with your uncles at El Puerto. You will learn their ways, old secret ways in farming. They will teach you. It will be good for you to be out in the sun working. You have been sick, and you have seen things I would not have wanted you to see. You are just a boy. But that is in the past. Now you have your communion and the summer to look forward to. Yes, I agreed. Now, read the prayers to me in English. She liked to hear me read the catechism in English, although she could not understand all I read, and I myself could not yet read with complete comprehension. Many of the old people did not accept the new language and refused to let their children speak it. But my mother believed that if I was to be successful as a priest, I should know both languages, and so she encouraged me in both. Ah, such intelligence, she beamed when I finished stuttering through the Hail Mary in English. A true man of learning. And she kissed my head and gave me some empanaditas she had saved from Christmas Day. One thing that helped to break the monotony of being locked in by the storm was the arrival of Leon and Eugene. They hadn't come for Christmas, and my mother was sad and worried. The only news she had about them was from people who happened to run into them at Las Vegas. Leon and Eugene never bothered writing. It was early one morning when we were seated at breakfast that my mother heard a car
and looked out the frosty window.
Jesús, María y José, she exclaimed. El policía.
We ran and crowded at the window and watched the state police car coming up the goat path. The car came slowly because of the deep snow. When it came to a stop, León and Eugene stepped out.
Mis hijos,
my mother cried. She threw open the door, and they came in, grinning shyly as she gathered them in her arms.
Hi, jefa, they smiled. León, Eugenio,
my father embraced them.
Jefe,
they nodded and took his hand.
Ave María Purísima,
my mother cried and made the sign of the cross.
Hey, León, Jean.
Andrew shook hands with them, while Deborah and Teresa shouted greetings and tugged at them. We all surrounded them with our embraces.
But why did the state police bring you?
My mother asked anxiously.
Was it Vigil?
Andrew asked, and León nodded.
Was there any trouble?
My father asked. He was at the window waving at the departing state cop.
No, no trouble.
Greet your grande,
my mother smiled,
and don't call her a jefa.
We all laughed.
¿Cómo está, grande?
They said politely and hugged Última.
Bien, bien, gracias a Dios,
Última smiled. And knowing they would be hungry, she turned to the stove to make them breakfast.
But you haven't told us why the state cop brought you,
Andrew repeated.
Tell them, Jean,
León smiled.
I knew you would return,
my father murmured.
I knew you would come back.
And he hugged them and led them to the table. He took out the bottle of whiskey while they removed their soiled, wrinkled jackets. They looked older than I remembered them.
Tell us what?
My mother bustled around them.
Feed them first, María,
Última said wisely. She was already setting down plates. León and Jean ate everything set before them like starved animals.
Heard about Narciso, León said through a mouthful. Too bad.
How's Tony?
Jean asked.
Fine, my mother answered for me. But you still haven't told us why Vigil brought you. Deborah, take Teresa upstairs and play.
Deborah and Teresa only moved to a corner of the kitchen and stayed to listen.
Tell him, Jean, León said.
Hell, you tell him,
Jean snarled. It's your fault this happened. You're the one who wanted to come home. He drank the shot of whiskey my father had poured for him and went off by the stove to brood.
Eugenio, do not speak that way in front of Grande.
My mother was stern now. Not even the joy of having her sons back could break this rule of respect for the elders.
What happened?
Andrew pleaded.
I apologize to Grande,
Jean pouted.
Jean, it's nobody's fault,
León said in his slow way.
And what's done is done.
But what?
My father implored.
We wrecked the car.
You had a car,
Andrew exclaimed approvingly.
Had is right, Jean cut in.
Yeah, we saved our money, bought a really nice Chevy. Last night on the spur of the moment, we decided to take off.
You decided,
Jean corrected him.
Wrecked it.
Where?
How?
Shh, let him go on.
Just this side of Anton Chico,
León said, unperturbed.
We hit a slick spot, solid ice, and we went down the ditch.
But the road was closed last night,
my father said.
That stretch of road has been closed every night for a week.
But would he listen to that?
Jean exploded.
I wanted to come home,
León said patiently. He understood his brother's mood.
Ay, mijito.
My mother went to him and hugged him, and Leon just sat there, smiling, his blue eyes watering.
As long as you are safe, who cares about a car? He wanted to come home to see his mother, she beamed.
But the car's not too badly damaged, Andrew asked.
Burned, Jean shouted.
Burned? Andrew gasped. There was silence. We waited a long time in the cold. Leon was barely audible. There was no traffic. We burned the blankets, then the seats, the gas, the tires. Sometime this morning we fell asleep huddled against the car, and all of a sudden, everything was on fire, burning.
That's when Vigil found you, my father said.
Leon nodded. At least we hadn't frozen to death.
Thank God you are home safe, my mother said. She crossed her forehead. I must give thanks to the Virgin.
She went to the sala to pray before her altar.
We shouldn't have come, Eugene groaned.
Leon and Eugene spent the rest of the morning in Andrew's room. I could hear them laughing. They were talking about the great times they had had in Vegas. In the afternoon, they dressed and went to town to play pool, they said. My father drank the rest of the day, so that by supper time, he was quite drunk. But he didn't rant and rave. He was quiet and brooding, and we knew that was the worst kind of drunk. He had been happy to see his boys, but the happiness had been short-lived. He too had heard them planning new adventures together, and he knew that come spring, when his yearning to move west filled him, that there would be no one to go with him. In the morning, my father's disquietude was proven. We were eating a late breakfast when my father came in from feeding the animals. He stamped his feet and went to the stove to drink a cup of coffee. He stared at my brothers while he drank, and his gaze made them uneasy.
It is colder than hell outside, he said.
Gabriel, the children,
my mother reprimanded him.
And take off your jacket, it is wet.
The melting snow was dropping on the hot stove. The little water droplets did a crazy, sizzling dance on the hot iron, then disappeared.
I have to go out again, my father answered without taking his eyes off my brothers. The wind has cut the tie wire of the windmill. If I don't tie it down, the wind will tear down the crazy thing before noon.
Ay, if it's not one thing, it's another, my mother groaned.
I went to the window, and through a small round hole in the frosted window pane, I could see the whirling blades of the windmill. The cold wind spun them so fast that the whole housing shook and seemed ready to come crashing down. If the windmill broke, it would mean many days without water, because the cistern was already dry of summer water, and melting snow would be a hard job. Melting snow meant frozen hands and feet, and the worst part was that it seemed a ton of melted snow only produced a quart of water.
How was town last night, boys? My father asked.
They glanced up at him nervously, and Andrew said,
Quiet. The men at the 8-Ball asked for you. Send their regards. They were glad to see Leon and Jean, though.
Aye, my father nodded and sipped his coffee. Glad to see the wandering Maris brothers, huh?
His voice was bitter. I guess he knew they would be leaving again, and he couldn't accept it.
We've been working, father, Jean said.
Uh-huh. My father nodded. I was just thinking. We used to work together.
Hey, he smiled.
It wasn't so long ago we built this house, huh?
Well, you boys did most of it, and I'm proud of it. I would get off work on the highway in the afternoon, and far down the goat path near the juniper where Narciso died, I could hear the hammering. and no matter how tired I was, I would hurry, come and help you. It was a wonderful time, huh? A man working, planning with his sons.
Yeah, Andrew said. Sure.
Yeah, Leon agreed and nodded.
Gabriel, my mother's voice pleaded.
Ah, he smiled. Just remembering old times. No harm in that, is there? And remember the summer I took you to work with me on the highway? I wanted you by my side. I was proud of you. He laughed and slapped his thigh. You were so small, those air hammers just tossed the three of you around like rag dolls. Tears streamed from his eyes.
Yeah, those were great times, Leon said vigorously.
His blue, melancholy eyes lit up. Even Jean nodded his head in agreement.
We remember, Father, Andrew smiled. Then they were quiet for a long time as they looked at each other.
The sons seeing the father suddenly old, and the father knowing his sons were men and going away.
Well, he cleared his throat and blew his nose. I guess those days are gone forever. In the past.
He laid down his cup.
I'll go fix that windmill now, he said.
But the wind, Gabriel,
my mother said with some anxiety.
It has to be done, he shrugged.
The wind was blowing hard, and the ladder up to the platform that held the housing would be thick with ice. He looked for the last time at his sons, but they avoided his gaze. Then he went out.
He should have waited for the wind to die down, Andrew said uneasily.
Or until it froze over and stopped itself, Leon added lamely.
Or until the damn thing broke off, Jean whispered. There's no sense in risking your neck for a hick town windmill.
I went to the window and watched my father work his way up the treacherous ladder. It was slow and dangerous work. He worked his way onto the small platform, and avoiding the cranking, spinning blades, he grabbed the loose wire. Carefully, he pulled it down, tied the loose ends, and put the brake on the turning blades. When he came back into the kitchen, his hands and face were frozen white, and he was dripping with the sweat of exhaustion, but there was a look of satisfaction on his face. Next day, Leon and Eugene left. This time, they took Andrew with them. He quit his job at Allen's Market and dropped his plans for finishing high school and went to Santa Fe with them. My father was not there when they left. The roads were opening up and all the highway crews were working. My mother cried when she kissed her sons goodbye, but she was resigned. I waved goodbye to them with some misgivings. I wondered if I would ever really know my brothers, or would they remain but phantoms of my dreams? And I wondered if the death of Narciso had anything to do with Andrew's decision to go.
16. After Christmas, I returned to school. I missed walking with Andrew in the mornings. At first, the kids wanted to know about the murder of Narciso, but I told them nothing, and soon the news was old and they went on to something else. My life had changed, I thought. I seemed older, and yet the lives of my schoolmates seemed unchanged. The kids still raced at the bridge. Samuel nodded and walked on. Horse and bones kicked at each other, and the yellow buses still came in with their loads of solemn farm kids. And catechism loomed in the future for all of us. I talked only once to Sico. He said, "We have lost a friend. We shall wait until summer to take the news to the Golden Carp. He will tell us what to do."
After that, I didn't see him much. I kept as much as possible to myself. I even lost touch with Hassan, which was too bad, because I learned later that he would have understood. Of course, the dreams that I had during my illness continued to preoccupy me. I couldn't understand why Narciso, who did good in trying to help Ultima, had lost his life, and why Tenorio, who was evil and had taken a life, was free and unpunished. It didn't seem fair. I thought a great deal about God and why he let such things happen. When the weather was warmer, I sometimes paused beneath the juniper tree and looked at the stained ground. Then my mind wandered, and my thoughts became a living part of me. Perhaps, I thought, God had not seen the murder take place, and that is why he had not punished Tenorio. Perhaps God was too busy in heaven to worry or care about us. Sometimes, after school let out in the afternoon, I went alone to church and kneeled and prayed very hard. I asked God to answer my questions, but the only sound was always the whistling of the wind filling the empty space. I turned more and more to praying before the altar of the Virgin, because when I talked to her, I felt as if she listened, like my mother listened. I would look very hard at the red altar candles burning before her feet. Then I would bow my head and close my eyes and imagine that I saw her turn to God and tell him exactly what I had asked. And the Lord would shake his head and answer, "The boy is not yet ready to understand." Perhaps when I make my communion I will understand, I thought. But to some, the answers to their questions had come so soon. My mother had told me the story of the Mexican man, Diego, who had seen La Virgen de Guadalupe in Mexico. She had appeared to him and spoken to him, and she had given him a sign. She had made the roses grow in a barren, rocky hill, a hill much like ours. And so I dreamed that I too would meet the Virgin. I expected to see her around every corner I turned. It was during one of these moods of thought that I met Tenorio one afternoon on my way home from school. The blowing wind was full of choking dust, and so I walked up the path with my head tucked down. I didn't see Tenorio until he shouted into the howling wind. He was standing under the juniper tree at the exact spot where he had murdered Narciso. I was so startled and frightened that I jumped like a wounded rabbit, but he made no move to catch me. He wore a long, black coat, and as was his custom, his wide-brimmed hat pulled low. His blind eye was a dark blue pit, and the other glared yellow in the dust. He laughed and howled as he looked down at me, and I thought he was drunk.
"Maldito," he cursed me. "Desgraciado."
"Jesús, María y José,"
I found the courage to shout back, and I crossed my thumb over my first finger and held it up to ward off his evil. For I truly thought he was the reincarnation of the devil.
"Cabroncito, do you think you can scare me with that? Do you think I am a witch like your grandmother? Bruja, may coyotes disturb her grave, the grave I will send her to," he added,
his vicious face twisted with hate. I felt my legs tremble. He took a step towards me and stopped. "My daughter is dying," he moaned, and the wind snapped at his pitiful animal cry. "My second daughter is dying, and it is because of the witch Ultima. She put the curse on my first daughter, and now she murders the second. But I will find a way," he threatened me with his closed fist. "I will find a way to get to her and destroy her." Not even when he killed Narciso had I seen so much hate in Tenorio's evil face. I seemed too small to stand in the way of a man bent upon destruction with such fury, but I remembered that my father had stood up to him, and Narciso had stood up to him, and even Ultima had stood against his evil. And although I was trembling with fright, I answered him,
"No,
I will not let you.
He took another step towards me, then paused. His evil eye grew narrow as he grinned. He glanced suspiciously into the whirling dust around us, then said,
I killed the entremetido Narciso. Right here.
He pointed to the ground at his feet.
And the sheriff did not touch me. I will find a way to kill the witch.
You're a murderer, I shouted with defiance. My father will stop you if you try to harm Ultima, and the owl will scratch out your other eye.
He crouched as if to pounce on me, but he remained motionless, thinking. I braced to ward off his blow, but it did not come. Instead, he straightened up and smiled, as if a thought had crossed his mind, and he said,
Ay, cabroncito, your curse is that you know too much.
And he turned and disappeared in the swirling dust. His evil laughter trailed after him until the wind drowned it. I hurried home, and when I could get Ultima alone, I told her what had happened.
Did he harm you in any way?
She asked, when I was through relating the encounter.
No,
I assured her.
Did he touch you, even in the slightest manner?
No,
I replied.
He didn't leave anything by the tree, anything you might have touched or picked up?
She asked.
Nothing, I answered. But he threatened you. He said he was seeking a way to kill you, like he did Narciso.
Aye, she smiled and put her arms around me. Do not worry about Tenorio's threats. He has no manly strength to carry them out. He murdered Narciso because he ambushed him in cold blood. But he will not find me so easy to ambush. He is like an old wolf who drags around the ground where he has made his kill. His conscience will not let him rest. He returned to the tree where he committed his mortal sin to find some absolution for his crime. But where there is no acknowledgement of guilt and penance done for the wrong, there can be no forgiveness.
I understood what she said, and so I went away somewhat comforted in the knowledge that at least Ultima did not fear Tenorio's plotting. But often, at night, I awoke from nightmares in which I saw Tenorio shooting Ultima as he had shot Narciso. Then I felt relief, only after I crept down the stairs and went to her door to listen, to see if she was safe. She seemed never to sleep, because if I listened long enough, I could hear a swishing sound, and then a humming, as she worked with her herbs. I had been close to Ultima since she came to stay with us, but I was never closer or more appreciative of her good than those weeks when I was sick and she cared for me.
Diecisiete. Alleluia! Alleluia! Alleluia!
The Holy Mother Church took us under her wings and instructed us in her ways. By the end of March, we were well on our way with our catechism lessons. There was no more exciting experience than to be on the road to communion with God. Schoolwork grew monotonous beside it. Every afternoon when the school bell rang, we ran across the school grounds and over dusty streets and alleys to the church. There, Father Burns waited for us, waited to instruct us in the mysteries of God. The spring dust storms of the Llano continued, and I heard many grown-ups blame the harsh winter and the sandstorms of spring on the new bomb that had been made to end the war. The atomic bomb, they whispered. A ball of white heat beyond the imagination, beyond hell. and they pointed south, beyond the green valley of El Puerto.
"Man was not made to know so much," the old ladies cried in hushed, hoarse voices. "They compete with God. They disturb the seasons. They seek to know more than God himself. In the end, that knowledge they seek will destroy us all."
And with bent backs, they pulled black shawls around their humped shoulders and walked into the howling winds.
"What does God know?" the priest asked.
"God knows everything," Agnes whispered.
I sat on the hard wooden pew and shivered. God knows everything. Man tries to know, and his knowledge will kill us all.
I want to know. I want to know the mysteries of God. I want to take God into my body and have him answer my questions. Why was Narciso killed? Why does evil go unpunished? Why does he allow evil to exist?
I wondered if the knowledge I sought would destroy me. But it couldn't. It was God's knowledge. Did we ask too much when we asked to share his knowledge?
"Papa," I asked, "the people say the bomb causes the winds to blow."
We were hauling the piles of manure we had cleaned out of the animal pens during the winter and dumping it on the garden plot. My father laughed.
"That is nonsense," he said.
"But why are the storms so strong and full of dust?" I asked.
"It is the way of the llano," he said, "and the wind is the voice of the llano. It speaks to us. It tells us something is not right."
He straightened from his labor and looked across the rolling hills. He listened, and I could almost hear the wind speak to me.
"The wind says the llano gave us good weather. It gave us mild winters and rain in the summer to make the grass grow tall. The vaqueros rode out and saw their flocks multiply. The herds of sheep and cattle grew. Everyone was happy, huh?"
He whispered.
"The llano can be the most beautiful place in the world, but it can also be the cruelest. It changes, like a woman changes. The rich rancheros sucked the earth dry with their deep wells, and so the heavy snows had to come to replenish the water in the earth. The greedy men overgrazed their ranches, and so now the wind picks up the barren soil and throws it in their faces. 'You have used me too much,' the wind says for the earth. 'You have sucked me dry and stripped me bare.'"
He paused and looked down at me. I guess for a while he had forgotten he was talking to me, and he was repeating to himself the message in the wind. He smiled and said,
"A wise man listens to the voice of the earth, Antonio. He listens because the weather the winds bring will be his salvation or his destruction. Like a young tree bends with the wind, so a man must bow to the earth. It is only when man grows old and refuses to admit his earth tie and dependence on Mother Nature that the powers of Mother Nature will turn upon him and destroy him, like the strong wind cracks an old dry tree. It is not manly to blame our mistakes on the bomb or any other thing. It is we who misuse the earth and must pay for our sins."
"But what is sin?" Florence asked me.
"It's not doing the will of God." I ducked my head and gritted my teeth on the fine sand the wind carried.
"Is it a sin to do this?"
He threw a finger.
"Yes," I answered. "Why?"
"It's a bad sign."
"But nothing happens when I throw it."
He did it again.
"You will be punished."
"When?"
"When you die," I said.
"What if I go to confession?"
"Then your sins are forgiven.
Your soul is clean, and you are saved.
You mean I can go out and sin, do bad things, throw fingers, say bad words, look through the peephole into the girl's bathroom, do a million bad things, and then when I'm about to die, I just go to confession and make communion, and I go to heaven?
Yes, I said. If you're sorry you sinned.
Oh, he laughed. I'll be sorry. Chingada, I will. I can be the worst cabrón in the world, and when I'm 99, I can be sorry for being such a culo, and I go to heaven.
You know, it doesn't seem fair.
No, it didn't seem fair, but it could happen. This was another question for which I wanted an answer to. I was thinking about how it could be answered when I heard a blasting goat cry behind me.
Wah!
I ducked, but too late. Horse's strong arms went around my neck, and his momentum made